And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome in to On to Waveland, Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney, fresh off a pretty, you know, you don't want to put too much into any one win, but I feel like, so last night, Cubs had the dreaded, it's now dreaded, 3-0 lead. I believe that's the fourth time this year they've had a 3-0 lead that has vanished, but I believe they've now won two of those. They've only actually lost two of them, but lead evaporated, and ultimately the Cubs won it in extra innings. First extra innings game of the year for the Cubs, is that right?
I think so. It felt like it. I remember thinking, because I was surprised by the man on second, I almost forgot that he was there. I was what's going on?
Thank you for not calling it a ghost runner. It is an actual human runner that... Yeah, I'm like rebelling so hard against
You're
that.
You're very upset about this, I've noticed.
It bothers me so much. Do you know why? There's two reasons it bothers me so much. One is just from a pure nomenclature standpoint, it doesn't make any sense because, of course, we all know as playing as kids, the ghost runner is an imaginary runner where you have to be like, yeah, there's a guy on second, even though there's nobody there. Well, that's not what this is, so it just doesn't make sense. And then two, it is clearly used as a pejorative by people who don't like this rule, where they're like, oh, well, look at the ghost runner. And so that bothers me as well, because I like this rule. I was someone who hated it when it was first introduced. I never forget. It first came up as like they're going to try it out in the some all-star game in the minor leagues, and then the Arizona Fall League. And this was like 7 years ago. And I was like, this is the dumbest thing. If they ever bring this to the major leagues, I'm going to just, poop my pants with anger. And of course, then when we actually saw it playing out, in my view, at least, I hated it much less than I thought I would. And indeed, the way that it spurs immediate activity is, I think, delightful. And it isn't just a cascade of sacrifice bunts and sacrifice flies, which is what I thought it would be. And it's not. So... anyway, what are we doing here? How did we? You set. Set myself off.
But anyway, you take a 20-second time out, Brett.
I know. I'm like, and then we could tell our producer, our producer Michael, just to crop out the 20 seconds where I'm taking deep breaths and gathering myself on the mound. No, we have a pitch clock here on this podcast, so I got to get to it. Another rule that is great and good, and I don't want to hear anybody bitching about. Oh my gosh. I'm not even like, I feel like I have become this defender of all things rule change oriented. It's not because I feel like I owe some duty to MLB to be like, yes, I agree. They're just coming up with good shit. And by the way, Cubs fans, almost all of these are coming under the push of Theo Epstein. So if you were like a big Theo Epstein fan, this is what he sees as the future for the game. Just saying, all right, I need another 20. I need another 20.
I'm just glad that Sahadev, you'd forgotten about the not ghost runner rule too, because I watched it last night. And I don't know, these last couple of seasons have just felt so made up. I love the seven inning double headers. And then after that first rain, they're like, that's going to be, two 9-inning games on Memorial Day. I was like, oh. And then watching it last night, this slap together spring training, why not? Just put a runner on second.
That is a good reminder, by the way, with the slap together spring training, this is the third straight year that does have a bit of a, okay. So let's actually get into some, a little more Cub focused, content here. I think maybe we'll start with the fact that that game went to extra innings, in part because Michael Givens had maybe arguably his first kind of really rough outing for the Cubs, even after, you know, kicking off his innings strong and then hits fell in and ended up giving up the game there. But by and large, once again, Cubs bullpen was kind of ridiculous in that game. And they've had to cover a lot of innings already this year, in part because of that slap together spring training. See, all of this is connected. We know what we're doing. We are pros over here at On to Waveland. Rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends. But I think that it's worth a moment now to say, because even in the series opening loss, bullpen was great again. Keegan Thompson gave up his first run of the year. Well, that's pretty good news when it comes on April 27th, if you're giving up your first run of the year. We say it. We said it in spring training. We say it, I feel like, every year. The Cubs find a way to put together a quality bullpen. It's just what they do. And so I have found myself hand-waving off any concerns before the season about, like, oh, I don't know how this mix of arms is going to look. I'm a little worried they didn't go get a surefire guy. And it's like, yeah, maybe, but it's always fine. It's always fine. My question for you guys is that still the way we're going to be talking about this in a couple months? Or have the Cubs figured out a way to arrive there even more quickly? Like, would we say what they are doing right now in the bullpen, which is it's a top five bullpen in baseball, all of the veteran additions have worked out very well, are pitching very well. With the only exception was Jesse Chavez, and the Cubs traded him. So, I'm just curious, like, is this just a small sample artifact? Or did the Cubs figure out a way to bring along their youngsters, really get maximum contribution out of them, and pick the right veterans? Like, are they just getting better at this is what I'm wondering? Because usually we don't see this sort of crystallizing until May, late May. You sort of honor some losses early on as you're figuring out roles. But I mean, they're kicking ass already, and we're only 3.5 weeks into the season.
Yeah, I don't know. That's hard to know, right? Like, I do think they've figured some things out when it comes to the pitching infrastructure, when it comes to developing at least relievers. That, you know, they've seemed to figure some things out with pitching development, and pro scouting obviously deserves some credit here, identifying the right relievers to target. So it's a combination of all of that. I do wonder, and it's hard. There's not enough evidence here to really dig into. We probably need multiple more seasons to know, but is David Ross better at figuring this out in the spring than Joe Maddon was, right? Does he have a way of figuring this out that's a little stronger, and he knows this guy's looking really good, I'm trusting this guy, I'm slotting these three guys. Maybe he's just been given better relief talent the last few years right out of the gate. Maybe it's that combination of what I was talking about. They're developing pitchers better now at the major league level with the structure around Tommy Haddavy and around Craig Breslow in the minors. Maybe that is the main contributor here, and Ross is just put in a better situation. But it is happening earlier. They seem to be able to find things and settle things by May or June, right? Remember that always would always be, what do they have here? Who are these guys? Ah, okay, it's clicking. I can see how it works. And then it does eventually work and they get better. Right now, it's like instantly David Robertson looks like a really good reliever. Michael Givens looks great. I mean, even yesterday, what did Givens give up? Like two shift-based singles, right? And then there was another single in there and a walk. Like the walk's probably the worst thing that he did. I don't think there was any hard contact in there after two swinging strikeouts of good players, if I remember correctly. Like, didn't he strike out some solid guys? It was Ozuna and Darno. So, I really like this bullpen. Scott Efros, how about him? He's every single time there are men on base in like the third or fourth or fifth inning, it's like you go look at the bullpen. It's like I'm not sure how much he's actually come in those situations, but clearly Ross trusts him to come in. If there's one or two outs and there's men on base, Ross is like, go get Efros up. And eventually he'll come in. Sometimes it's just a clean inning if the pitcher that's out there gets out of that jam. But he clearly trusts him. He doesn't walk guys. He strikes guys out. He puts balls on the ground. Like, he's a, that's a real nice surprise. And then you have obviously other younger guys, other young guys that are flashing some impressive outings.
Can I slip in a comment on that? What's maybe the most impressive thing about Efros, and this is probably the first time he's come up on this podcast, which is a bit crazy when you consider the performance, but when we were talking about how the rosters were going to shrink back down in a week, and you talk about the younger optionable relievers, well, Efros is a younger optionable reliever. He's got options. His name doesn't even come up because we've already settled into saying, well, he's not going anywhere because he's like the trusted bridge guy. So there's the compliment because he's just been that reliable.
Yeah. And I think that's actually the biggest part of it, right? Let's see what they do the rest of the next 2 months as far as the team as a whole. But the safe bet is that David Robertson, Michael Gibbons, is there another veteran I'm missing? Well, those two guys.
Chris Martin.
They probably aren't Cubs in 2023, right? I'm not exactly 100% sure what each one of their contracts
said. In 2023, they're probably not Cubs in August.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. They're probably trade bait come July. Scott Efros, Ethan Roberts, even Michael Rucker. I know he probably needs to miss more bats, but he's getting outs. Those guys are interesting. Rowan Wick, obviously, has been around for a while, feels like a veteran. That's how, if you can get those guys around too, like make sure that they're figuring things out in this early part of the season. Maybe they're pieces that you can build a bullpen around that's more than just a team that you're selling pieces off of.
I think it's great that they figured it out, but I think we all know that this is not sustainable, that they're going to be running a huge risk with the way they're potentially using these guys, and the biggest boost for them is going to be Kyle Hendricks and Marcus Stroman and eventually Wade Miley coming back, because I think we saw some of that last summer when things clapped. Obviously a lot of it was on the starting pitching, but just that cumulative effect. And the Cubs got to hope that Drew Smyly has a good outing tonight. But yeah, I think, Brett, you kind of mentioned it last episode and kind of tweeted it during a moment of frustration during the Pirates series. Like, you're not quite there yet to where games should be managed in a way to market and preserve trade deadline assets. But that's kind of where my head goes when we start talking about, Robertson, a guy coming off of Tommy John, and some of these older veteran guys who obviously, Chris Martin got his World Series ring this week, so he would fit on a contender. And Gibbons is kind of that eighth inning guy who can also close a bid and will certainly be attractive if the Cubs don't get it together here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think to put a bow on this for now, I will mention that in conjunction, and we talked about this, I think, last episode, in conjunction with the rosters shrinking back down from 28 to 26 on Monday, it was going to be the case that the long-awaited 13-pitcher maximum rule was going to kick in. I sort of remembered this, but I didn't confirm it till I looked it up. So that rule was created in advance of the 2020 season. It was just after the 2019 season. There was an agreement to create 13 pitcher maximum rule. Then the pandemic hit and they were like, well, we can't do this for the pandemic season. And then there were still pandemic related concerns going into 2021. And it was like, well, we can't do that for 2021. And then it was like, well, we've got to shorten spring training because the lockout, we can't do that. And they had a cutoff, right? It was May 2nd. It was like, okay, it's going to kick in. And then they're like, well, actually, we can't do it yet. This was the announcement yesterday. They're punting it another month that you will be able to carry up to 14 pitchers. When that does eventually happen, this conversation that we're having right now, particularly the point that Mooney made about how sustainable is it to lean this hard on certain guys, that conversation gets harder for the Cubs if they don't have starting pitchers who are going 5-6 innings consistently, because then instead of the 9 or 10 relievers that the Cubs have had for years, it'll be just eight guys. Now you're going to be able to circulate some of them up and down from Iowa, but some of them you won't. And those guys like Robertson and Givens and Martin, who are quality veterans, but who are older and you just have to manage them a little more carefully, that's going to get harder. So this, you know, for as much praise as we would rightly heap on the Cubs and David Ross for the way that they have succeeded much faster with these guys, that's going to get a lot harder pretty soon. So stay tuned.
This does not need to be answered right now, but I've always wondered this, and I need to just watch more Rays games, I guess, is how many can you get away with? How many of those starts can you get away with? 1, 2, 3 inning starts, right? If like Mark Leiter works perfectly fine if that's the model you're using. 2 innings, maybe an out into the third, but then you go bullpen game, right? Long reliever, like Keegan eats some innings and then go to your best arms. It can work. The Rays have made it work. Is it 2 guys? Can you do it with 2? Is that once you get past 2? I mean, 2 feels like it's pushing it. And then
you're not going to be able to do it with 8 in the pen. You can't have a guy. I love this question. I can't wait to talk about this when it comes, because you're right. I don't know exactly how the Rays do it. I suspect it's, well, for one thing, their openers shuffle in and out of the bullpen. So that's one part of it, because you can't have an opener like I think I agree with you. Leiter's best role would seem to be he can give you 2 innings, maybe 3 if he's very efficient. And it's only one time through the order, but you can't have that guy in your rotation. You can't say we're only going to get 2 innings per week from one of our 13 arms. The math on that truly does not work.
Yeah. Well, then they have a major problem on their hands. And, yeah. And, you know,
we were talking off mic before we were recording about how the podcast helps us crystallize a lot of our thoughts that we end up putting into writing. And I've got a draft saved about how David Ross, after last night's game, mentioned he actually used the word opener. It was the first time I've heard him use the word opener. And he was describing not how they necessarily intended to use Leiter, but how it played out last night and perhaps how he has shown them he would be most effective. And I love that. I love the acknowledgement of it. I love the recognition that like that can be a very effective thing. But when we go down to 13 pitchers maximum, it's just going to have to change. And like in the relationship between what I was saying before and what we've just started talking about now is a really strong one for the Cubs. Because like you said, Todd, I don't know how you, something has to change in a very fundamental way. If you've only got a 13-man staff. And I think hopefully for the Cubs this year, at least, it's Wade Miley coming back. It's Kyle Hendricks and Marcus Stroman more consistently giving you innings. Big question, not just with Leiter, but what happens with Alec Mills? What happens with Justin Steele? We can talk about this if you want. I feel like it's a little early. I saw Gordon Whitmire had written about it. The conversation about at what point you think about Keegan Thompson for the rotation. I'm just hesitant because he's working so well in this multi-inning role where he knows, okay, I'm going to go about 50 pitches. I can max out, use everything I've got for those 50 pitches and dominate. We saw it last year with him, different pitcher at that time, as you've written, sort of some fundamental changes to his body and his game. But we saw it last year with him when he was trying to be more efficient early in starts. He wasn't missing any bats, and that, you know, for some guys it works. Like Kyle Hendricks is not a bat misser, and it it increases his efficiency because of the contact he induces. I don't know that that's Thompson's game. When he's finding bats, I think there's some more hard contact. So I just think there's a lot of interesting angles to this that I was so ready to dig in on in advance of Monday when it was like, okay, here it is, the 13-man staff. I think people are really, and I mean this across baseball, not just Cubs fans, people are really sleeping on the impact that that's going to have. Because like a team like the Rays, I would bet dollars to donuts that they have not had a 13-man staff for more than a day or two in the last 4 or 5 years when they've been doing what they've been doing.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. It's going to be interesting, and I think it's kind of what Jed and Theo were getting at when they said it's not sustainable for a full year. I think maybe after the 16 playoffs is when people really started talking about it a lot. Like, can you do something like this, have shorter starts? And then it started happening more often in the playoffs after Cleveland really had an effective postseason. And I remember multiple times, it feels like every like GM or winter meetings would ask Jed about that. It was always Jed, it seemed like. And Jed was like, and you could, Theo would talk about it as well, but they were adamant starters. You want inning eaters, that they're hard to find. That's why you got to pay up for them, but that's what you want. It's not sustainable to do it over the full 162 games. I think some teams have kind of proven that wrong in a sense, but then again, like you said, Brett, that's not under these current or these soon to be current rules of 13-man pitching staffs. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out. But I don't think like a lighter start works. I do wonder, can you get like Drew Smyly 4 1/3 innings regularly and make that work? But then you need Steele to go 5 or 6, right? Or Smyly needs to go 5 or 6, and then you get 4 from Steele. But it can't be 2 innings, right? That's when it starts.
And
to
you
really
occasionally got
to
get like the 7, 8, 9 every
right,
now and again.
From, but that needs to be like Hendricks and Stroman and Miley, right? You need to really rely on them getting to 6, and then one of them going short throws the whole thing out of rhythm.
I mean, this just goes back to the basics, right? I mean, you need certain guys that you can count on, like foundation pieces for your roster, and that's why you give Marcus Stroman $71 million and why you extend Kyle Hendricks and why you put that Wade Miley waiver claim in and then be like, he's in our rotation for 30 starts. And just there just is not enough on the front end or the back end to make this at all sustainable, particularly given the fact that we all know what Jed is thinking going into this season.
I guess we kind of yada-yadded over the inherent tension in this topic between what a fan of an individual team might want to see, which is for us as Cubs fans, we want to see the Cubs being very successful with, if they go with this bullpen strategy that they've done this year, we love it. It's succeeding. It's great. As contrasted with what MLB at a league-wide level wants, which is more starting pitchers going longer. That is what drove this. See, a lot of what I was getting saucy about at the top of this podcast is what has driven the conversation more recently. But in 2019, it was all about how do we counter exactly what Sahadev was saying. The developments that came after 2016, you could blame Andrew Miller because he was so good in that multi-inning role that teams suddenly were like, wait a minute. If we got a guy or two like this in our bullpen, we can suddenly completely restructure the way we're thinking about our rotation. And I get that, nothing wrong with teams doing that, but it's the league's responsibility to always be asking itself, is this the most entertaining version of our product? And so I credit them that it didn't take long for them to be like, uh-oh, starting pitchers are getting marginalized big time. And that's not necessarily the most entertaining version of baseball, because we like the idea of Max Scherzer. Like we like that, to say nothing of the, you know, limits on constant switching of pitchers in a game and the drag that creates. So I think it's good that this conversation is coming back, but the very problem that we're talking about, you know, the problem with for the Cubs of like, oh, how do they deal with this? Well, MLB's response to be tough shit. That's the point, you know, is we don't really care what happens to you in 2022. We want you to be focused on developing long-term starting pitchers. So step up and do it. That, by the way, is the response to like, for like all of these rule things. What did I see? It was Jake Arrieta was on the Compound podcast. I don't know if you guys saw the clip was floating around. I hadn't had a chance to actually listen to the podcast, but it's Ian Happ's and friends podcast. And Arrieta, the clip they circulated was him talking about banning the shift, which is obviously very much on the table for next year. And, you know, he was saying, you know, but it's, you know, shouldn't hitters be able to adjust? And what does it say about the game if the best hitters can't adjust? And da, da, da. He's making all these points and that I know a lot of pitchers will make, right? It's anti-pitcher to ban the shift. But again, MLB's response, if they had their druthers, it would be tough shit. Deal with it. This is the version of the sport that we think is best. You've got to deal with it. That's the pitch clock response. It's the answer to all of these things. And so, not that I would want to personally say that to any of these players' faces. Can you imagine telling Max Scherzer if he's like anti-pitch clock? Well, tough shit, Max. Deal with it. I would not have a face anymore.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fun. The pitch clock thing is one thing that players that I've discussed and then seen others online talk about the injury risk about that. Like, there have been studies that I know it seems minimal, but just like rushing a pitcher to throw that next pitch increases injury risk.
But see, even that, so I am super sensitive to player health. That's not something I want to put at risk. But there's a version of responding to that is also tough shit, which is, well, you have to develop from the start as a guy who can pitch. And the only reason that being, quote, rushed would risk injury is if a guy has a system in place for him that was taking advantage of the fact that he needed longer to sort of summon it between pitches. So while at a micro level, it could be bad for some guys, and I don't like that. And same thing with sticky stuff, right? It created some potential risk for some pitchers. I don't like that. But the answer isn't, okay, so we have to keep in place anything that helps protect 5% of the players.
Right.
No, that's not the answer. Sorry to the 5%. Sorry.
Think you're being too rational about this. I just had a free programming idea for whether it's Marquee or ESPN or MLB Network. And to just have, like, you know how like Adam Schefter has like the cam in his house, that you just set that up for like John Lester and John Lackey, and you could just get their grumpy responses to any new rule change or experimental idea. I know Sahadev liked going to them at their lockers, and they were always so good to give a gruff, caustic response to what the suits on Park Avenue were up to. And I think it would just be amazing that, like, when people are trying to discuss these issues, you just have like the Lackey cam or the Lester cam, and then they would just, you know, trash whatever Manfred and friends had up their sleeves.
Yeah, I think everybody can imagine John Lackey reacting to.
Yes, I can picture the dismissive guffaw right now.
Well, this ended up going in a delightful direction, I think. We're actually, you know, we don't have an official time limit on this podcast, but we sort of have a ballpark we like to stay in, and we're already there. Didn't even really meander into some of the other stuff we wanted to get into, but I think this ended up being a nice way to wrap a lot of the league-wide discussions in a conversation about the Cubs and the issues that they have been facing and will be facing. So I can already imagine to our producer Michael, who, you know, packages these and titles them, it's going to be tough shit. No, I'm just kidding. He will not. And in fact, I might even get he would never scold me or admonish me because he's the nicest guy in the world. But I might get a side text from him that's like, hey, you know, next time, you know, we're allowed to be explicit, but maybe just fewer shits. Just, you know, let's try to max out at like 6. I don't know if I ever told you guys this. And again, this isn't a shot at Michael because he handled it so professionally. He's so nice about it. But we had a podcast maybe 2 years ago, and I think I said the F word maybe 5 to 8 times. And
Jesus,
I forget. I don't remember what it was. I must have been really pissed off about something. And he was like, hey, you know, we're labeled explicit. It's permitted, but you know, because he had clearly heard from someone. Someone was like, let's not have quite that many. So I will try. Folks, I will try to limit my shit dispersal in the next episode. Take
please
that as you will. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. We appreciate you listening. As always, I'm Brett Taylor. You can catch my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get their stuff at The Athletic, including they just dropped a two-part mailbag, which I meant to plug earlier in the episode, but it's actually perfect to plug at the end because you can stop listening and then go to your device and read this. Really good stuff from them. A lot of the topics that you want to hear about, want to get their thoughts on, they touched on them all. So it's a really great couple of reads. We will be back at you early next week with our next episode. And hope you have a good one. Take care out there.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.